Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Old Men and the Three ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good, but that's when you say to yourself, it's time to get back in the game and take as much of my friend's money as I possibly can. That's right. The hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to be the biggest tycoon ever. It's classic Monopoly, but anytime with tons of twists. Play on countless Monopoly boards, charge your friends rent, or smash their landmarks with a wrecking ball. You can even team up with friends for extra rewards. So put on your game face and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play. OM3 fans, I need to tell you about the most comfortable pants out there. They're from Vuori, and they're magnificent. I'm not kidding. Jason told me about them. He called them butter on your legs. Vuori provides a new perspective on performance apparel, perfect if you are sick and tired of traditional old workout gear. Everything is designed to work out in, but doesn't look or feel like it. So comfortable, you will want to wear it all the time, and I do. Honestly, it's comfier than whatever you're wearing right now. Now, the pants I mentioned up top is called the Men's Sunday Performance Jogger. Grab yourself a pair. It'll change your life. Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. Get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/JJ. That's Vuori.com/JJ. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Go to Vuori.com/JJ and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
Welcome to The Old Men of the Three with J.J. Redick and Tommy Alter. This is episode 130. Donovan Mitchell, we're coming live from our new 342 HQ. It's tight and cozy, but we love it.
Look at this. We need to make do a quick shout out to Jason and Kylie for setting this up. It's pretty crazy. Not only does the place look sick, and we're going to do a full tour later on our YouTube channel, but how fast they were able to do this is pretty insane.
Yeah, we got it done. This is a big week, Tommy. We are really excited to announce a partnership with DraftKings. It's personally my favorite sports book. We're going to have a lot of great content for you guys, centered around betting, of course, but also some really important conversations about the NBA. Since we relaunched the pod, we've had, four episodes, however many it's been, and we haven't had really any NBA stuff to talk about. And this is the first week of the NBA season. There's already been a bunch of great games. I took Knox, my oldest, and Jason to the Nets game last night against the Pelicans. And I'm coming off a first take appearance yesterday where Stephen A says the Nets are going to the finals. I would never judge a team one game in, and they're missing Seth Curry and Joe Harris. But you know, there's still just something missing from that team. And I don't necessarily mean personnel. I mean the spirit. I thought the Pels looked great. We're going to get into our playoff seedings in a second, but I'm high on the Pelicans this year.
So how much of the Pelicans' 130 points is the Pelicans with the combination of Zion and BI taking a jump? Remember that there's the Pelicans' potency offensively, and how much of it the Nets just not playing defense?
Well, the Nets weren't a great defensive team last year. You know, you add Royce O'Neal, you add Ben Simmons on the perimeter. You hope you're a little bit better. Kevin Durant made some phenomenal defensive plays last night, including meeting B.I. at the rim for a great block. But there's something about bigger teams. Valanciunas last night, Zion, of course. They just killed that team on the boards. And that's where I think – look, I don't know what that means in the playoffs. If you're going against a Giannis and Brooke Lopez, or you're going against Joel Embiid. But there's some – there's some mass down low that team is missing right now.
Yeah, and what did you think? You know, you've obviously played with Zion. How did you think he looked? What did you think? Was there any rustiness? Was there anything that sort of?
I mean, look, he looked like Zion. He looked bouncy. There was a couple times he got his own miss. That second jump is special. I saw the force. I saw this. I mean, he looked like Zion. He looked like someone who is in shape and fit and ready to go. The other guy we should shout out, just, you know, honestly, because he's part of the brotherhood, but number one overall pick, Paolo Banchero, last night with 27 points in his debut. He's the first guy. This is crazy. He's the first guy since LeBron in 03 to go for at least 25, 5, and 5 in his debut. Looked every bit of a number one overall pick.
And a poster.
Yeah, and a sick poster.
Night one.
And this week's guest, of course, Donovan Mitchell had a big game. We'll get into a bunch of stuff with him. Don had 31 last night in a loss to the Raptors. And I think we should that should lead us right into some of our picks here. Our early, very early, having seen one game.
Well, we have to say we made these picks
last weekend.
We made these picks last weekend before we did the games, and we're not going to change any of the picks based off of anything that has happened, obviously.
No.
So this is they're already set in stone.
All right, I'm going to go through the Western Conference first, and then we'll go through your Western Conference picks, and we can talk about that. All right, so Golden State, LA Clippers, 3 Memphis Grizzlies, 4 Phoenix Suns, 5 Pelicans, 6 Nuggets, 7 Dallas, 8 Minnesota, play-ins, 9 Lakers, 10 Blazers.
Okay.
Your picks?
1 Golden State, 2 Denver, 3 Phoenix, 4 Minnesota, 5 Clippers, 6 Pelicans, 7 Memphis, 8 Dallas, 9 Lakers, 10 Portland. Okay.
All right. So a couple things, a couple teams I want to highlight here. So let's talk about the Nuggets real quick because you have them high. I saw Mike Prada had him at number one. I think he had him winning 58 games. Came across my timeline the other day. For them to finish that high, the assumption is that Jamal Murray is the Jamal Murray pre-injury and that Michael Porter Jr. is Michael Porter Jr. pre-injury.
Yes.
And I believe Mike Malone has already come out and said that Murray's minutes initially may be monitored and restricted a little bit. They got killed by the Jazz last night. The Jazz.
They did get smacked by a team that's trying to lose.
I'm not going to, again, nothing off one game. I said in the newsletter, it's crazy to get those guys back and have them in the sixth seed where they finished last year with Jokic basically carrying that team to the playoffs and rightfully so winning the MVP. I think the Western Conference is harder this year because of Zion being back, Pelicans getting that valuable playoff experience last year. The Memphis Grizzlies, to me, I know you have them lower. You have them 7.
I have them 7.
I have them 3. The Grizzlies, to me, have an identity. They have a spirit. They have their core group back. You know, some of that depth they have with D'Anthony Melton going to the Sixers, Kyle Anderson signing with Minnesota. Some of that may hurt, but you know Zaire Williams could potentially fill that role that those guys played. So I just think the Grizzlies are going to be great. And then the Clippers. How do you have the Clippers 5? Well,
the thing. We didn't do playoff picks and we didn't do finals picks. I think the Clippers are going to the finals. I'm not going to say the Clippers are going to win the finals. I think they're going to the finals. I don't think that they are going to finish in the top four because I don't think those guys are going to play that much.
Okay.
I think they all, and you know that with the guys in that team, you know how they're going to set their minutes up, and it's not really going to matter how they're doing. They're just going to sit. They're going to sit at various points. They're going to, you know, have 5 rest days a month or whatever it is. And like to our point earlier, there's no off nights in the West. So when they sit, they're not going to win. I mean, that's not a team you want to run into in the playoffs. My question for you about Memphis, there's 2 teams I wanted to ask you about, Memphis and Dallas. Dallas obviously got to the conference finals last year. I have them 8. What do you have them, 7?
I have them 7, yeah.
Yes. Do you think, we were talking about this with Jason earlier, who's biased, obviously. I think they lost their second best player, came to New York, for friend of the show. And I don't think that they have anyone who can replace him, at least right away. Do you think there's any reason for optimism that they could potentially be better than they were last year?
Again, it goes back to believing that the Western Conference is better. We still haven't really talked about Minnesota. We may get there in a second. Denver being better, the Clippers being better. I don't know that Dallas on paper got that much better. Tim Hardaway Jr. coming back is great for them. And I think he was missed last year, his shooting. his scoring, his just, he's a spark plug. He starts, he comes off the bench, but you know, he's going to take 12 to 18 shots. He's going to be aggressive. He's going to give you floor spacing. I don't think they're going to be better. I think the Western Conference is better, and that's really what we keep running into. Here's an interesting thing, actually. Okay, so according to DraftKings, right, Luka is the odds-on favorite to win MVP. He's at plus 425. Those are his odds right now. I don't see a scenario. And he's, by the way, I believe he's been the odds-on favorite for a couple years running now.
Yeah.
I don't see a scenario. I don't care what kind of numbers he puts up. Unless they end up being a top three seed in the West, I don't see them winning him winning MVP. And I'll tell you why. Hold on. I'll tell you why. Because I think you have the Warriors one. I have the Warriors one. What does that mean? That means Steph Curry is probably in the running for MVP. That means Steph Curry
is. Did we not have this exact fight about Jokic last year? About Jokic winning MVP?
Yeah.
On a mediocre team?
Okay, but what he did... Okay, fine. If Luka Doncic breaks every single advanced stat record, then yeah, okay. He's in the 7-seed. We can talk about that. I'm not questioning whether or not Luka is an MVP caliber player.
I was just going to say...
I think this thing runs in cycles. It's like when Russ won in
the year after KD.
The year after KD, right? Yeah. They ended up with a 6-seed. He won first, averaging a triple-double since Oscar Robertson. The other thing I wanted to mention, because you brought up the Clippers, and I don't know why you have them fifth, but they are the favorites to win the Pacific Division, despite the Warriors being the defending champions. Of course, the Warriors are the second. The Clippers are also the odds-on favorite at plus 320 to win the Western Conference this year.
Are you so?
I think everybody's pretty high on the Clippers.
I was going to say, are you a little surprised by that? I mean, we know how good Kawhi is. John has looked good so far. But it's also like, these guys haven't played together. So there is going to be a feeling out period.
Some of this is the depth, the size, the length. They have one of the greatest shooters in the NBA right now in Luke Kennard. Like, to me, they're a complete team. And they have guys that buy in and can play.
Great coach.
They have guys that buy in, like that run they made when I was in Dallas. Like, Patrick Beverley ended up not playing.
Yeah.
For part of the series, and obviously he's not on the team anymore. But Ty Lue gets those guys to buy in. Speaking of DraftKings, right now everyone can earn up to a 100% boost with DraftKings stepped up same game parlays. Go to the DraftKings Sportsbook app, opt in, and place a stepped-up same-game parlay today. If you don't already have an account, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and sign up with promo code JJ and boost your winnings up to 100%. That's code JJ only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
We both have the Pelicans in the top. You have the Pelicans 6 or 5?
5.
I have the Pelicans 6. I have the Clippers 5, Pelicans 6. Yep. Are even after last night, is there a world where we think there's going to be this is a team, you know, obviously that made the playoffs last year, but they really turned it on at the end. Is there going to be a feeling out period for them, especially defensively? There's an incredible amount of talent on that roster, but do you think we may be overhyping them a little bit?
Well, it's a good question. And obviously with Valanciunas, they're primarily going to play drop coverage. It will be interesting to me as the season progresses how teams attack Zion on that end and what kind of coverage Willie Green opts for when they use Zion's man and pick and roll. Last night, they had him a little bit on Ben. They had him a little bit on Royce O'Neal. And I think Zion has the option, though, of playing in more of a hedge, which nobody does anymore, playing in more of a hedge coverage versus switching or in drop. And I think that's matchup dependent. So that's one thing to watch is Zion's sort of pick and roll coverage, how they deal with matchup hunting against him on the defensive end. But I think Willie is a smart coach. Having a guy like Larry Nance come off the bench and being able to switch 1 through 5, that's a luxury to have in certain lineups. I think you're right, though. I think defensively is sort of the big question mark with the Pelicans. And for them to end up being a top four seed, they probably have to have a top 10 to 12 defense, which I think is capable of doing. Hey, let's move to the Eastern Conference. Let's move to the Eastern Conference. Why don't you give us your picks? We have some disagreements here.
So I got Philly 1, Milwaukee 2, Miami 3, Brooklyn 4, Cleveland 5, Boston 6, Toronto 7, Hawks 8. And then I will grant that I picked the Knicks and Detroit in the play-in. There's an oversight. I should have had the Bulls instead of Detroit.
Okay.
So the Bulls are going to be in the play-in, I think, with the Knicks. I don't think the Bulls are going to make the top 8.
Okay. So I had Boston 1, Milwaukee 2, Philly 3, Heat Culture 4, Nets 5, Cleveland 6, Raptors 7, Bulls 8, Hawks 9, which every statistical model has them winning a lot of games. Their over-under on DraftKings is very high. I think Kevin Pelton's model has them a 75% chance of winning the division over the Heat. And then I got Knicks 10. Explain the Boston 6 pick. I
basically think right now from the latest reports, we're probably not going to see Robert Williams till January, February, something like that. I think there's a decent chance the defense falls off. Not falls off a cliff, but falls off. And I think the East, this is what's been weird about these picks. The East is really good.
Yeah.
Again, you're in a situation where, you know, there are teams that might have been easy wins last year that are not going to be easy wins this year, including some of the younger teams. And I think the margin for error for them is going to be a lot smaller. And if Williams is there, that's a top three team. Again, but we just don't know. I think we talked about it a lot about how important he is, and I just think that will be a
so my only argument against that is at the end of last season he was out for an extended period of time, and that defense held up. And if you watch that first game, and obviously we made these picks before the first game against Philadelphia, if you watch that first game, whether it was Noah Vonleh, whether it was Blake, Al Horford, they have so much size at every position and length with Tatum and Brown. Smart coming down to double. I thought their schemes in game one against the Sixers were really good. They were mixing up when they came on the double. Sometimes it was early, sometimes it was late, sometimes it was on the dribble. You know, and I think that level, I saw some, we call it scrams, where a guard ends up on Joel and like the weak side comes over, the guard scrams out, gets back to the weak side corner. They don't have that matchup issue anymore. Like, to me, this team is battle-tested. They're hungry. You know, I don't know, and I can't speak on what the effect of losing Ime Udoka and bringing in Joe Mazzulla, but I was impressed with the scheme and how they played. I thought their movement offensively, too, was great.
I will say, this is a good example of we're standing by our picks. If I had made these picks after Tuesday night, I don't think I would have had Boston.
You forget that they made the finals last year?
No, so I just, confused. I basically think, and I thought the Brogdon pickup was great too, and we can talk about that impact. I thought the Brogdon pickup was great too, but I think that they were so locked in, and maybe I'm giving too much credit to Ime. I think they were so locked in defensively. They made such a turn the second half of last year going into the playoffs, that it just felt like one of those things that, you know, if you don't have that defensive anchor, if you don't have the coach who helped turn this defense around, it's not that they're all of a sudden not going to make the playoffs and going to be a bad team, but that may cost them 8 or 9 wins.
Right. Okay, that's fair. A couple teams that I sort of, you know, again, you don't know the injuries that are going to happen throughout a season. A couple teams that I'm like oddly high on, but I don't have a way to justify putting them higher in my preseason predictions is the Cavs and the Toronto Raptors. Again, I personally, and there's a lot of owners and GMs that don't believe in this shit. I personally believe in continuity. And I personally believe in building an identity and a culture. I talked about that with Memphis. I think Toronto has that. I think Nick Nurse has done that in Toronto. Masai has done a good job of building out that roster, drafting well. I really like their team. For both those teams, I think the ceiling is lower maybe this year and could be higher in years to come. And that's similar to the T-Wolves. Like when we start talking about young players potentially making big jumps, like we saw from Ja Morant last year, we talk about Anthony Edwards with the T-Wolves, Evan Mobley with the Cavs, Scottie Barnes with the Raptors. Like those team ceilings, to me, are dependent upon those guys making that Ja Morant, you know, year two or year three leap that we saw last year.
I was going to ask you about Scottie in particular, what you think his ceiling is, because I can just say anecdotally, I feel like anytime we talk to another player around the league, that's a guy they are constantly hyping up. Just everyone is like, he's the truth. No matter, like, teammate, non-teammate, whether they know him or anything like that, there's a constant level of praise. And I mean, we don't know for sure this is the case, but there are a lot of reports that Toronto was not interested in trading him for KD, for example. Yep. So clearly they value him in the same way.
Yeah. I mean, his ceiling is an all-NBA player. To me, the shooting, he's got to become a better three-point shooter. I'll give him a little bit of a pass. There's some people on NBA Twitter that are like, Scottie Barnes is an overrated defender. You know, he looks like a defender, but he's not a defender. And look, he was a rookie last year. There's a big learning curve in the NBA. So the capability of being is blasphemous. Absolutely blasphemous. But the capability of, like, being a Kawhi, I mean, Kawhi is Michael Jordan. You know, Michael Jordan, mid-range, incredibly efficient, great defender. Like, Kawhi's one of the best players ever, obviously. I don't know that Scottie Barnes will end up being as good as Kawhi, but if he becomes a better shooter and locks in on that defensive end, because he's already got, like, his playmaking is great. You know, they can basically play him as a point forward at times. And that's the one thing. I didn't watch a ton of college basketball. I was surprised by that. For a rookie, his feel for the game, his passing, it's high level. And I think he fits with those guys in Toronto because it's a smart group. It's a smart group.
Especially at that size and how physical he is. I'm curious what you think about Miami.
Yeah, I mean, no one talks about Miami. No one talked about them last year. They were the number one seed. People thought it was like a fluke thing, and they're one shot away from getting the NBA Finals for the second time in 3 years. Again, I literally, on my notes in the newsletter, I had a little write-up on every team. And on the Miami Heat, who I pick fourth in the East, I just wrote hashtag Heat culture. I'm a believer. And so maybe they're higher than four. You know, I know how Jimmy works. I know his mindset. He's going to come back better. Tyler Hero is going to come back better. He's a worker. I've said this. We just talked about a bunch of teams and sort of their ceiling hinging on one thing or another. As good as Bam is, I would like to see night to night him establish himself a little bit more offensively. But some of that is, look, some of that is how the Heat play. You know, it's a, I don't want to call it like socialist, but, you know, night to night, like, we don't necessarily need to go, this guy's going to get this amount of shots and touches. This guy's going to, they just play basketball.
Yeah.
And so I think Bam's inconsistency, because he averaged whatever, 19 last year. I think some of the night to night stuff with him is a byproduct of how the Heat play.
Do you think that depth is partially why they finished first in the East last year and will help them this year in terms of just, like, you know, they don't need Jimmy to play every night. They don't need Bam to play every night because they go 10, 11 deep.
Yeah. I mean, that's good organizations, and good rosters. That's how they're built. You gotta have some wiggle room to offset a guy spraining an ankle or having a sore knee or pulling a hamstring for a couple weeks. And the best organizations and the best teams are built that way. We got a great conversation for you guys with Donovan Mitchell. We're really excited to get to it. We touch on a bunch of stuff. He tells an all-time story from the night the league shut down. I had never heard that story before. I just a really interesting glimpse into that time period and the sense of uncertainty and a little bit of fear that we all had in March of 2020. I thought his story was phenomenal. We talk about his time with the Jazz, what he's looking forward to with the Cavs, of course, his relationship with Rudy Gobert, and just got an honest, open, funny conversation with our guy, Donovan Mitchell. One more housekeeping note. As a reminder, We have a newsletter here at Old Man of the Three and 342 Productions. The newsletter is called A Farewell to Takes. It's very easy to subscribe. Go check out our social channels. Lots of NBA content, food content, wine content, and probably my favorite part, Gallagher TV Plus, brought to you by Jason Gallagher.
All right, let's welcome in Donovan Mitchell of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Donovan, it's been like 4.5 years since we've had you on the podcast, the original version, pre-Tommy even, of the JJ Redick podcast on The Ringer.
It's you and I in the CAA office.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's a lot to catch up on. A lot has happened since then, obviously, which we'll get to. Before we really get into the meat of it, I did have a couple questions on a couple former teammates of yours that I just need you to confirm or deny. First of all, is Mike Conley really the nicest guy in the NBA?
Nicest guy.
God damn it.
I think, I want to say he might have gotten one tech, his first tech of the year, but I think he got rescinded. Yeah. So I think he doesn't have one.
JJ claimed that he was nicer than Mike when we had Mike on the show. He tried to say it to tell him to his face. That
I don't
he was
know. You've gotten a tech though. I've seen you angry.
Yeah,
I've never
just because I get technicals with referees, right, doesn't mean I'm not a nice guy.
I've never seen Mike switch from like being like, you could be everybody's a nice guy on, off the floor, but then when you go on court, like Mike's competitive, but he won't snap. Like he won't get to that point.
You've never seen him lose his cool, like even in a practice,
not in public. Not like in public. He's guilt mad and like walk to the back and then like, but like it compose was himself. Once, like very far few in between. Like I've never seen it.
All right. The second one is there a bigger asshole in the NBA than Joe Ingles?
No, not at all. There was a time we played OKC and Terrence Ferguson was a rookie. And I think it was like a preseason game or something. And Joe hit a three and just started, it's on video. He just starts talking shit to him the whole way down the floor. Terrence Ferguson, like we've just got in the league. No, nothing. Just contested his three and just starts just going off. And I'm like, for what? Like, what did he do? Like, we're up 30. Like, you know, like why are we? But I love Joe though, man. That's a guy you love to have on your team though.
He's a special guy. There needs to be, I'm sure it exists somewhere on YouTube, but there needs to be like a montage video.
I think there is.
Of all of Joe Ingles' antics.
The playoff series my first year was when I really
That was against OKC?
OKC. He really got into it with PG. That was a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
We'll get to the Utah stuff in a bit. I think we should start though with your new spot, and that's the Cleveland Cavaliers. So if I have my dates correct, it was reported on July 12th. That the Utah Jazz were open to shopping you.
It's right before Summer League or right after?
Yeah, in the middle of it. Yeah. It was right, you know, the articles I could find. And then you got traded around September 1st. That's a pretty big gap in between. How are you maintaining your sanity amidst all that uncertainty for that number of weeks? Days. Yeah. It felt like days turned into weeks, turned
What's
into months.
What's craziest is that was probably the, like out of all my summers in the NBA, that was probably the best summer I had for mental sanity, clarity, and just like health. Like I was really at a place where, cause we had lost, I had a bad playoffs. The year was up and down for us. And for me, I just came into the summer like, I'm just going to focus on being the best me I can be. And then obviously all that stuff happened. And, you know, I really got to thank my friends and my family. Like we really did. Like I didn't even go to summer league. I went on vacation just off the sole fact that I was like, I want to support, but it's like at the end of the day, I don't want to have to walk through the casino and have 85 people say, hey, where do you want to go? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just really took time to focus on Don. And I think that's very underrated. And I didn't understand that until this summer. But there were days though. there were days where I'm like, oh man, like what's going on? What's happening? Where am I going? Do I got to take stuff out my Utah house? What am I doing? You know what I mean? But it was a really good summer for me mentally, you would think would be the opposite, but it really was a good summer for me.
Prior to the trade actually being consummated and finalized, were there close calls? Were there?
Yes.
Specifically, the New York Knicks?
Yeah. Like, when I tell you, like, I got traded, what, September 3rd? Maybe something like that? Like, on the 1st, I went to sleep. Like, okay, I'm on the Knicks. Like, I'm going to New York. I'm building a house back home. I was already doing that anyway. So I'm like, all right, we got to expedite that. Like, we got to get all this stuff figured out. And, you know, just 2 days later, you know, my agent called me and said I was going to Cleveland. So that was a shock, at first, but I would say that was a moment when I was like pretty certain that that was going to be the case. And, you know, I told everybody, like, all right, guys, keep it quiet, but this is probably going to happen.
So how are you keeping your, a pretty measured guy in general, but how are you keeping your cool when this is happening? Because this is a big, it's a big life moment.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I had a feeling it was going to happen before camp, just because if I had went back to Utah, that's a lot, like to throw Will Hardy in there, who I love, by the way, I love Will, for his first year as a head coach. And then you're dealing with all the questions every day at camp like that. I just didn't think that was going to happen. And for me, it was just like, I feel like I have something to prove just because of the year I had. You know, I didn't take the leap that I wanted to, that I expected to. So for me, it was really just doubling down on that because, you know, at the end of the day, I could be in Cleveland. I could have been in OKC. I could be in Utah. I could be in New York, wherever. I still had to do the work. I still have to do the work. Like that's where my head is at. And, you know, wherever I am, just be prepared for anything. You know, that's kind of how I trained all summer. Just be prepared for whatever gets thrown your way. And, you know, that's really what allowed me to kind of stay here, is because, like, doesn't matter. I was like, forget where you're at. Like, you got something to do. Like, you know what I mean? So that's really what helped me stay the course.
Jason, you can leave this in, especially for our YouTube audience, who will always complain about this and always point this out, but we're going to make the correction on air right now. Donovan, can you fix your mic?
I thought you were about to say something so serious.
No, dude, we did our first episode with Draymond, we did in January. And I think, I want to say it's our longest episode. And it was like 1 hour, 37 minutes on video with Draymond. And the entire time,
just like a little bit off.
It was just like a little bit off. Yeah, yeah. And you know, people notice these things. We read the comments on YouTube, guys. Coming to this situation, you know, this was a team that, you know, barring some injuries, probably would have been a top six team in the East and avoided the playoff or the play-in game. And a lot of young pieces. Darius took a big jump last year. Jared Allen was an all-star. Everybody's really high on Evan. As you sort of come in here, what are your sort of expectations for this team?
You know, a reporter asked me this, I think, when I first got here. I said, on paper, we look scary. You know, we have the potential to be that. But coming in, we haven't done anything. You know, and I think that's kind of been the mindset with the group, which I'm glad that it mirrors my own feelings coming in. It's like, we have something to prove as a group. We can really be really good, but it's going to take some time. You know, we want to win now. That's why we play. You know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you, like, yeah, we want to contend for the first. And like, I've been doing that. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I want to win a championship. And these guys, we all feel the same way in this group, in this building. We all feel the same way. So that's what we're preparing for. And, you know, for us, like, we have the talent, man. We have the group. We have guys who are locked in. We have guys that, you know each other's roles, know where we want to be. And the biggest thing now is just figuring each other out, you know, and that sometimes takes longer than it should. And sometimes it doesn't, you know, and I won't really know until we get out there and, you know, and play. And it's the first few preseason games, you know, you're figuring out quick. And the one thing I love about JB, he was like, look, I'm putting you and DG in every rep together. Whether from the starter camp, we did every rep. We never on the different team. We're always repping it out. And the thing about DG, man, he's such a great person, you know, like such a great person. And it's easy for myself, and he's welcoming, you know, him and his family welcome me, Ev, JA, you know, it's everybody's been phenomenal since I got here. And, you know, that makes the transition easier. But I'm excited for us. We got something to prove. You know, this team, we haven't made the playoffs in, I think it's 4 or 5 years. Myself personally, I've made it every year, and I'm trying to continue to build upon that and get farther. And, you know, we got a hungerness and a hungriness about us that I'm excited.
Did you train with any of the guys before the trade?
DG, but we didn't know that this was happening. So we would be working out, and, you know, I said this to somebody, I was like, man, like, I'm working out with Bam and others, and I'm thinking, all right, this is just preparing, you know, this is what it's going to look like. And DG's right here, like, working out. And then it's like, literally all you gotta do is look like right here. And that's who you're playing with. It's kind of funny how life and
so you
and
thought
works.
You were going to end up in Miami with
Miami, Bam. New York, where else? Maybe Washington. Like, those are the three in my head that, yeah, I thought, like, okay, if anything were to happen, it'd probably be on that side.
It's funny how life works like that.
It is. It's crazy.
Well, you could just have for a big life event, you know, and relating it to basketball, whether it's free agency and thinking you're going to end up on one team,
for me, trade deadlines twice where I think one thing's going to happen and the other thing happens that I had no idea was coming. But I think you sort of develop a little bit of resiliency, but there's also like that moment of, this is a business. Like this is a business and there's a lot of moving parts in this thing. When did you first sort of learn that a trade was even possible? I assume
for me or just in general?
Like for you, like, cause I assume when they traded Royce and then they trade Rudy, you've got to be thinking, all right, am I next?
Yeah. So like you said, the business aspect was, we told Danny and them, like, look, let's not make this big blow up trade. Everybody assumes I asked to trade Rudy. I say, let's run it back. Like, you know, because we say what you want. Like we have our differences for sure, but I understand and we understand, both of us understand the value we have playing together as a group and what we could possibly have done together at that time. So I'm thinking, all right, cool. You know, take some time off. This hurts. We'll figure it out. Maybe add a couple things, change a couple things, but you know, we're going to be back. And then, I'm with Will Hardy, at my house. We're talking about what the season can look like for us as a group. They traded Royce for a pick, which I was like, okay, like, you know, we didn't see that coming at all. You know, I talked to Royce. Royce let me know a few days before that might happen. But then I'm with Will talking about the whole situation. And then Rudy gets traded while we're having a conversation at my house. And I'm like, all right, well, we're probably going a different direction. And you know, at that point I was like, all right, I'm probably going to be next. But at that point it was early in the summer. So I'm just enjoying being home. Like I wasn't like worried about it. Quinn had resigned, prior to that. So the writing was on the wall and I probably should have looked at it earlier, but I was so focused, like I said, on just Don, like, how can I be the best player for myself? Because I wasn't that for my team. I wasn't that for, you know, I wasn't my best self. Now, statistically, I had my best year, but I just didn't feel like myself. I wasn't 100%, you know, where I needed to be. And, you know, I really where my head was at. And then once Rudy got traded, it was kind of like, all right, this is where we're going.
Did you see the Brian Windhorst clip from First Take?
Yes. Yes.
After Royce got traded, we were actually talking about this while we were waiting for you to come out of practice. First of all, shout out to Windy because, you know, he was right. A lot of things happened in Utah after that trade.
He ruled the summer.
Yeah.
He ruled the summer for sure.
That clip, I mean, a master class in holding tension in a room. Just a phenomenal job by him. What an appearance.
He had everybody on their toes, man, trying to figure out what was up.
There's this, I don't know if you would call it a rumor, maybe a notion. There were certainly reports at times of Rudy and you not getting along or not liking each other. And look, you look at the on-court success, and maybe there wasn't a championship, but there was certainly a long run of playoff contention, Western Conference Finals contention, and your skill sets complemented each other, and it was a good it was a very good duo. So, you know, why do you think there was always those sort of underlying reports of tension between the two of y'all?
I think the COVID situation really made it. That was really the start. You know, I think that was the biggest one. And then how would we handle being in the bubble together? That was like the first narrative. Like, how would we? And to be honest with you, like, our relationship got better after COVID because I understood what the hell he was talking about. Like, a lot of times, like, I was like, bro, like, sometimes you got to understand, like, coming from college, I played for Rick Pitino where it's just a yelling mentality. Like, that's all it is. You got to understand how to talk to people. That's a big thing about the NBA is, you know, the way I talk to you can't be the same way I talk to you. Like, you got to be able to understand that. And I didn't understand that coming right fresh out of college. I'm like, if you just don't get it, then what are we talking about? And that can create something. And I got that and I understood that. But, you know, our relationship grew after the COVID situation. We got better on the floor. We got better as a team. And now, granted, we made certain trades and whatnot, but him and I, like, you know, I think it was blown way out of proportion. I think there was a game this past year. Rudy had somebody sealed underneath the paint and I just should have threw the pass. Like, it was just a simple mistake. Like, should have threw the pass. And we had given up, I don't know how many double digit leads that year. So it just fed into the narrative. But when we were winning against, we eventually lost against the Clippers. Like, there was no, there was no story. Like, but when we struggled and lost to teams, lost games we shouldn't have, we lost like 8 in a row. Like, that's where the stuff compiles on. And I feel like this past year really got blown out into proportion because we were the top pick and roll duo in the league, you know, with all that said and done. So we obviously didn't achieve, you know, what we wanted to achieve in the championship. But, you know, for him and I, like, you know, there's no bad blood. Like, I don't hate Rudy. If Rudy was here, we're not getting into a fight. Like, we're not doing nothing crazy. And that's not a shot, by the way. I didn't mean that. That's not a shot or anything like that. But
we were talking about this earlier, but I mean, this is sort of for both of you guys. Don't you just think that this is where we are now as a culture and as a climate where it becomes, rather than just like you didn't accomplish exactly what you wanted on the court, there always has to be more.
Right. There has to be a problem. There has to be like, oh, it has to be these two. We just fell short. We had two, I would say we had two really good opportunities. Mm-hmm. The bubble year, if I don't get that 8-second violation in game one, and people probably don't know what I'm talking about unless you watch the game for real. Like, you know, the we win game one. If we blew a 20-point lead in game five, they come back. Then they win the rest of those games. Obviously, we had a lot of injuries against the Clippers, but we were up 2-0, you know, and we lost four straight. Like, those are two years right there where you can make something. Like, we go to the conference finals, we beat the Clippers. Who knows what happens against Phoenix? Who knows what happens if we beat them and get to Milwaukee? You never know. And we blew those opportunities, and that's on us, you know. And I'm at a point now, thanks to this summer, where all the narratives and the media and all that stuff, I've just been at a point where I'm like, I don't know. Like, it's like, it has to be done, or it has to be real. Like, all right, cool. Like, who's the, for years, like, who's the best? Who's the better player? Like, who gives a shit? Like, we're trying to win something, and, you know, obviously we didn't do it, you know, and I'm looking to do that here with this group of guys, but, you know, there's always going to be that.
Well, I you brought up the clip of you not passing the ball to Rudy, and I remember, you know, when that clip sort of went viral and was shared around NBA Twitter, and then there were some statistics. I don't really remember the exact stat, but it was like how many times per game Don passes to Rudy. Yeah. And look, it's not like you're playing with Joel Embiid. Like, you're not going to throw the ball to Rudy in the post. That's not who Rudy is. That his greatness is in other ways.
Right.
To Tommy's sort of comment though, I do think it's not just culture and society. I think this is very, very specific and very real in the NBA, where you have two young players, that are very talented, and whether it's true from the inside, it's certainly, the case from the outside, where you're looking at it and you're sort of like, oh, it's two guys trying to figure out who's the alpha, right? Trying to figure out who's the best. And sometimes, you know, when you don't have sort of that ultimate success, then it's like, well, why it's going on? So let's speculate on what it is. And sometimes you kind of just admitted this. Sometimes your team's just not good enough.
Right.
Sometimes you have a bad performance, and sometimes you have a bad matchup. And I think that to me is like very specific to the NBA.
100%. I think you hit it on the bad matchup. Like, I think, you know, our weakness for 2 years was the spacing threes. Like, it just was. We as guards didn't do a great job, because for so long, our defense was predicated on, if we got a guy on our side, you basically let him go and up to Rudy, you know, and that had worked, and it worked. But eventually, this is the NBA. Teams are going to figure it out. Like, you know what I mean? And the Clippers were the first team to really do that. I mean, James Harden and the Houston Rockets did it too, but no one really, we weren't as big of contenders my first 2 years when we played the Rockets versus 3, 4, and 5. So the Clippers, you know, we lost the game six, and we lost that series in that way. And then that's how teams started to play us. And that's on us. Like, I don't really, you know, like, I can sit here and make all this. It's just on us. We just got to keep a man in front. We didn't do that. And then when Rudy would come over, they just spray in threes. Like, you know, that's just on us. And we had to have been better than we weren't. That's on me as a leader to not find a way. And, you know, I'm willing to take that. Like, that's my job. That's why I get, like, I have to take that. Like, you know what I'm saying? And for me, it's like, okay, how do we get better? And that went into the summer that I'm speaking of, because I just wasn't as good as I wanted to be.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
If you're looking for well-crafted clothes and laid-back vibes, then you need to check out the Movement Collection from Faherty. The playoffs are coming up, which means I need to look sharp at games, so I've got the Movement dress shirt ready to rock. This thing looks really great, but it's the comfort that does it for me. It's extremely soft and breathable. Plus, it has a longer length, so you can tuck it in, and a true spread collar, so you can wear it with a tie. I just love it. For listeners of the show, Faherty Brand is offering 20% off your first order when you enter the promo code OM3 at checkout. Go to fahertybrand.com/JJ and check them out. That's FAHERTY.com/JJ for 20% off your first order with code OM3.
I was still, I think, injured or not back yet, but we played you guys when I was with Dallas right after I got there. And we had KP at the five, mm-hmm. and you guys, I think, put Royce maybe on him.
Yep.
And you put Rudy on Dorian Finney-Smith.
Mm-hmm. And this was back before he started shooting the way he has. Yeah. Man. So shout out to Finney-Smith.
But so Rick was just like, you know, Dorian, just go to the corner
mm-hmm.
and, you know, take them off the dribble, and Rudy's got to help.
Right.
And I think Dorian Dodo had like, I don't know, 6 threes that game. And I was like, huh. And I obviously had watched the Clippers series, but I'm like, I think, you know, there's other teams now that are starting to figure this out. And you brought up your own defense, and you came into the NBA with a reputation as a defender. And I never really had a reputation as a defender. And people will say like, well, you got to be better on defense. Like for you, what does that mean? Like
how do you, front.
Yeah.
Like, it's the NBA. Like, you know, I could play great defense, but at the end of the day, like, you're going to hit a shot. Like, you know, the spacing's different. Like, there's a lot more room to get by, but it was the level that I was getting beat at that I wasn't proud of. You know, like, you're going to get beat. Like, it happens. Like, guys score, guys do that. But it was just like the point of attack. Like, you can't get beat point of attack every possession. Can't keep a guy in the paint. Like, just be better. Like, whatever it means, whether it's your technique, like I'm closing out, I'm wide, I'm open up lane, you're just going right by me. Like, it's bad technique. So literally I'm in the gym, like, okay, just closeouts. Like, closeouts. That's all, like summer, like just closeouts. Get your reps in, but then closeouts. Just simple stuff. Like, it's nothing. Like you said, I played for Rick Pitino. Like, Rick was probably mad at me for that. I'm not going to lie, but you know, it's just little things that you can work on and that I had gravitated away from because I was doing a lot offensively and I kind of was just like, oh, like I'm tired. But for me, it's like, you just keep a man in front. It's not hard, you know, to be able just to do that, to make him take at least 3 or 4 dribbles. And that way there's going to be at least some type of help there, you know, and if they hit a contested shot over you, then so be it. Guys are talented, but that was where I was really disappointed. It was just like, man, I'm just getting beat. But I look back and I've watched that series probably 3 or 4 times, and it's just like the lazy close out and then getting beat. Like, you guys got to be better, like 110%.
I'm curious what you've seen from these guys here defensively so far, because obviously Evan feels like he has, you know, the sky is the limit, to put it mildly.
Yeah.
And you've seen that, like you've played with that guy already. So like, not to compare the two of them, but just where you see this coming here.
It's crazy. Like, you know, we have two 7-footers now. So our defense, our principles are a little different because we have more length, you know, than we had in Utah at the 3-4 and or the 5-4 in the 3 spot. So our principles are a little different, but you know, at the end of the day, it goes back to the basics. But with Ev and JA, like, you're not saying good luck when somebody drives, but basically you're like, good luck. Like, the one of them going to be there, and me and DG and the three, like, we're scrambling on the perimeter and just trying to cause chaos. And that goes back to really my roots at Louisville, where everything was just like, it's like controlled chaos. You're running around and closing out and continuously finding ways to keep guys off the three, but forcing them in tough contested twos. And, you know, JB, man, there's one thing we're going to do every day. I promise you this. We're going to do closeouts. I promise you that. So it's kind of crazy how, without even knowing, I've been working on that. Now you're coming here and now I'm asking a ton of questions, just trying a way to get better, because it was a piss poor performance by me, to be honest with you, defensively. And, you know, I own that. And, you know, to being in a group that was top 5 defensively last year, I've said, like, I'm not here to bring that down. I'm not here to be a liability. I want to get better. I want to continue to work on it. But it helps when you have Eve and J.A. back there, and then Isaac Okoro on the wing, Dean Wade, Karis LeVert. Like, you have guys with length and size and quickness and continuously making it tough.
On Evan, and not to bring up NBA Twitter again, but NBA Twitter seems to love him, and there's a lot of people around the league that really love him. Besides defensively, what have you seen either from him in preseason games and workouts in practice that just makes him such a special talent and has so much potential?
He has the hard shit. Like, he has the height.
He has the hard shit?
Yeah, like, he has, like, the easy stuff. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's hard to teach the hard stuff. Like, it's the stuff that, like, you can't teach. He has innately. Now, it's just all about repetition and getting better at it. But, like, I mean, I've seen him take a shot fake from the high quadrant, the wing, and just take one dribble, palm it, and just get a layup. Like, you can't teach that. Like, there's just so much stuff that you can't teach. Now, when he gets the little shit, the fundamentals, the footwork, the face-up game, which he had last year, but he's only going to continue to get better, and he wants it. Like, he wants it. Like, he wants that challenge. The only part I get on him about is just being more vocal. He's a quiet kid. Like, he's very quiet, but, you know, when he settles, I wouldn't even call it settling. Like, he's a turnaround fade. I'm just going to shoot over you. Like, I'm not comparing him to Kevin Durant, but Kevin Durant does that. He's like, oh, at the end of the day, like, I'm just going to shoot over you. Like, that's what Ev just resorts to. And it's a good shot, like, from 14, 13 feet, whatever it means. So, like, that for me, I'm looking at that, like, you know, like, go ahead, go to work. And now he's a passer. He's working on his passing game, being able to pass out the post. Teams double him. And then he's also working on his three ball. But he has the stuff that's like, ooh, that's tough. Ooh, that's tough. Like, he has that innately. And then the easy stuff, he's continuing to learn. Like, you know, and I think for him, you know, he wants to learn, which makes it better because he's in the gym asking questions. He's in the gym working on it because there are guys that just have it at that height and they're just like, look, I have it. Like, I'm good. But he's out continuously finding ways to get better.
When in your rookie year do you feel like you figured out the vocal part? You got the basketball part pretty quick.
The vocal? I was always vocal because if I wasn't, I was always on the treadmill.
Yeah.
With Coach Pitino. Like, if you weren't talking, like, you're on the treadmill for like 5 minutes. So I was always vocal. I think for me was understanding what to say. Like, you know, I've always tell everybody, like, if you don't know what to say, just say anything. Train yourself to have that, you know, continue to be vocal, continue to say anything. And then once you start, and I'm doing that here, like, I'm calling out coverages that we had in Utah, but I still know what I'm trying to say until I figure out the verbiage and what they call certain things. But that's the biggest thing, man. If you can just talk, you get through so many mistakes. Like, you're going to make mistakes. Like, these guys, it's a tough league, but how do you communicate? Okay, you stay here. All right, cool. You come here, you go down there, we're switching over, rotating, whatever. And then also being vocal is, hey, Don, like, you can't get beat because they're putting me in a bad spot. Like, being able to have that conversation too, I think is underrated. I don't think people understand the value of being able to say that in the moment, because it's easy to come back and watch the film and say, hey, you got to be better here. But in the moment, being like, nah, if you got to slide over, I'm going to take the low man for you. Like, being able to have that conversation is huge.
It's amazing the impact that college coaches have. And it's a different mentality.
Yeah.
I would just call it mentality than NBA coaches. It's a different, you know, player coach dynamic. But like, I was such an extroverted person. Unless I really felt comfortable with you. And then I got to Duke. And like, again, to your point, you had to talk.
Yeah.
And if you didn't talk, you would run. And even in warmups, we're doing stretches and like, you just, there's just like chatter. And so you learn chatter.
Yeah.
You learn to just be constantly on. And, you know, I get to the end of my career and I probably had teammates with, man, shut the fuck up, dude.
Right.
Like,
right.
You
know, right.
I wasn't trying to be annoying, but yeah, it's like, I'm not CP level,
right,
where I'm not, I didn't have to say something on every single play, but you know, it is funny how that sort of develops from a brief period of time in your life when you're like 18 or 19 years old. The fit with DG, cause I know ended up playing quite a bit of point guard last year when Mike was on the bench. How do you see sort of that dynamic working where you guys can use your immense skills to sort of complement each other?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like in Utah with Mike, you know, we kind of keep it where we're like on each side. One of us are on each side of the floor. Each have an outlet, you know, it's like a big choose the side. We either run the floor, we run. We're always trying to find a way to be interchangeable. And you throw Karis LeVert in there too, who's handling the ball as well. And then when Ricky comes back as well. But for me and DG, man, that's where one thing I always thank Quinn for, man, is just being able to know every spot. Like, that's the one thing how this is, because DG did a lot last year, like, as far as having to do a lot, and he did it efficiently, which is very impressive. So I keep telling him all the time, like, you know, your life is going to be a lot easier, just for off the strength of the looks you're going to get, just off the strength of the spacing you're going to have and whatnot. And he's very receptive to that. You know, it's more like, okay, what do you see, Don? And we're asking each other questions back and forth. But for me, man, like, putting ourselves in our actions, making it tough, who do you want to switch with? Who do you want to leave open? And then ultimately that trickles down to everybody else in the lineup. But keeping us on opposite sides, you know, during the playoffs, my first 2 years, and I didn't watch the play-in game with them, but, you know, everybody, you get the ball right here. Everybody, all five defenders are right here. You know, now it's like, all right, DG's here, but Don's here. Okay, what's going on over here? Now DG rejects and has a layup. You know, oh, we're looking at DG. Here comes Don off a pin down. I'm in the lane finding Jay for F for a lob. Like, there's so many things you can do out of that. It's weird that now I'm like the older guy in this situation, you know what I mean? And having, and explaining certain things. And like you said, the talking. And I told these guys, like, I may be annoying, but, like, trust me, like, this little things are going to continue to pay off. And, JB's been great at being able to find ways for us to excel in these things and changing a little bit of what they've done before to tweak to fit my stuff. And then also keeping what DG feels comfortable with. And, you know, I'm excited, man. And like I said, it's going to be great, you know, but there's going to be times we run into things because we haven't played with another guard like each other. You know what I mean? And there's going to be things we got to figure out, and not in a bad way, but just find a way to get better at it as a group and make the game easier for each other. And it's always good when you start camp off turning down shots and trying to pass to each other than the other way around, you know, and coach had to literally sit both of us down and be like, shoot the fucking ball. Like, this is what you guys do. Like, don't have to continuously find a way to do that, because now you're hurting everybody else if you don't take the shot you're supposed to take.
My first year in Philly, we played you guys fairly early in the season. It was probably somewhere between game 10 and game 15. We played in Utah and I guarded you, and you shot 3 for 21. I don't think, I'm not particularly worried about you ever passing down shots. Yeah, I'm like, this guy's a rookie taking 21 jacks on a playoff team. Yeah, this is amazing.
Yeah. I remember that game too. That was my rookie year, right?
That was your rookie year, yeah.
That was me versus Ben.
Your real rookie.
That was, yeah, exactly. That was me versus Ben. That's what that was, me versus Ben. I didn't win that one though.
I want to switch gears for a second. So March of 2020, you know, we're all hearing sort of that we might take a few days off from the NBA. We were actually with New Orleans. We were on a West Coast trip, and we had gone to San Francisco, and we were in Sacramento getting ready to play. I was dealing with a hamstring injury, so I was sort of in the back. Guys are out on the court shooting, whatever, fans are coming to the arena, and we're watching the early game and getting ready to tip off, and all of a sudden this guy runs out on the court, and
yeah, it's like, know, the FBI was in the building. Yeah. that was crazy.
And then, so, you know, I've told the story of what we sort of went through in that locker room, because we ultimately decided not to, they were going to let us play the game. We ultimately decided, I don't want to be in a stadium with 20,000 people. What do you remember about that night though in Oklahoma City?
Man, first of all, that was a big game. That was for seeding. So, like, we're ready to go. Rudy is out because he obviously had COVID, but he was sick. So we're in here like, all right, like, you know, we got to help Tony out. Tony Bradley, who's, I want to say, second year, like, he's never, that guy's really started much. We got to be over-communicative, telling, like, we're all locked in, man, and ready to go. And we get out there and we're going through the handshakes. And I remember sitting there, I'm shooting the ball, like chilling, like, oh, this is probably like water on the floor or something. But then out of nowhere, like all these suits just come running on the floor. And I'm like must be like a shooter in the build. Like I'm thinking like it's something crazy. And then it never dawned on me that it was that until it was. And then Chris was like, CP was like, what's up with Rudy? Like, what's up with Rudy? And we're like, no one's saying nothing. We're just like, all right, game's canceled. So we get in the back. Quinn's like, all right, Rudy has COVID. So now we're like, oh shit. Like, okay. And this is back when we didn't know nothing. Like, we didn't know anything. You know what I mean? So, we were in the locker room for 9 hours. after the game. We're in,
I'm sorry, what?
We were in the locker room for nine. Because first of all, the Oklahoma didn't want us like to go anywhere.
Right. They didn't want
like,
y'all back at a hotel.
No, yeah. They didn't want us
people
to go
weren't wearing masks. This is like when they're telling you to wash your hands.
Right.
A lot.
To wash your hands to like happy birthday or whatever, yeah. Like whatever it is. So we're in the locker room for 9 hours. We get tested. And this was the original test, the one that is all the way up here, like touch
up on the skull.
Like, it was a lot. And it wasn't, I wouldn't say it was panic in the locker room. It was just like, what can we do? Like, we're just here. And, you know, CP, thank God, shout out to CP, sent 15 bottles of wine that night. So we had food and then we won.
That's
so
the first I'm hearing of this.
Yeah. We got drunk. I'm not going to lie to you. We got drunk because we're just like, all right, so there's definitely no game. Like, we're not playing for a while. And they're in a moment where you can't, everybody's calling. We're on FaceTime with everybody. Anybody you could think of is calling everybody in this locker room. And we're sitting there like, we just don't know what's going to happen. Like, we're trying to drink to not be scared. Like, you know what I mean? Like, in one of those moments, you're just helpless. So then after 9 hours, we finally go to, I don't know what hotel it was, but the way we went about it was, I don't know who drove the bus, but he was in a full suit. He drove the bus. We're going back to the hotel.
Like a hazmat suit?
Yes. Like like full suit. Everybody's in a full suit. Everybody that's not within our team is in a... And we keep in mind, we had 53 in the travel party. So that's reporters too. That's the coaches, the training staff. That's whoever. We're all in the locker room. And then we get to the hotel and it was weird. So like the cops are there and the hotel's completely emptied out. It's just us. And the cops are sitting there and we can't get food. We can't do anything. We're just sitting there and we're going to fly out the next morning. And I'm calling every friend I know that has a private plane. Like, look, just get the players out. Can we get the players out home? And everybody's like, no, we're not doing it. None of us went to sleep. We're just sitting there on the curb of I want to say it's like a Residence Inn or something. We're just sitting on the curb outside.
Renaissance Inn.
Renaissance. That's what it is. Thank you. That's where
I know the hotel.
That's where
just
we're at.
Just sitting on the curb.
Just sitting on the curb, drinking Bud Lights, just chatting. Because we just like, this is the craziest thing I've ever experienced. Because we're just like, all right, like, what happens? Like, we didn't think any of us might have had it at the time. And, you know, Ed, if you ever talk to Ed Davis had a cold. And when I tell you he was coughing up a lung the whole night. And we over here like, F, stay the fuck away from us. Like, we don't want no parts. And we like literally would stand over here and Ed be by himself. And it was just crazy, man. Like, it was like just a scene out of a movie. I'll never forget that night. I have pictures on my phone from that night that I'll probably frame up in my house at some point in time and tell my kids, like, this is this is one of the biggest moments in sports and in history of the country.
Who was drunker, Joe or George? Do you remember? I know both those guys.
No, they were both up there, though. They were both up there. JC was up there, too. But no, that was...
It was a weird time, though, because nobody really knew what it was, right? And I was very much like, I just don't want to get it. Because I, you know, as an athlete, a respiratory illness, like, I don't want to get it. When you tested positive, were you scared shitless? Or did you kind of feel like, all right, I'm going to be all right because I'm young?
I was angry. I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, I would say out of all the media reports that have ever come out about me, Rudy, and the team, that was probably the most accurate. I was mad. I thought at the time, because we didn't know, I thought because Rudy was around doing whatever, that was the reason I got it. Now we don't know. Like, I could have given it to him without contact, like whatever it was. We don't know now looking back at it. But at the time I was like, all right, like, mom, sis, because we had just left New York. We had the East Coast trip. So we did New York, Boston, and somewhere else. And then we came home for a game and then we went to OKC. So we had just had that trip. So once I found that I had it, I called my mom and sister, like, look, we got to find a way to get you guys because they're in Connecticut. So Connecticut rules are different than Utah rules. I fly right home. So I don't go back to Utah. I fly right to Connecticut to be my mom and my sister. And just sitting there, I didn't get any symptoms. I'm sitting there panicking. They shut down the Adidas headquarters because I saw people from Adidas. They shut down the school that I went to because the varsity basketball team came to the game. They shut down the Encore in Boston because I went to the casino to play roulette for like 5 minutes. They shut down a lot of places just because I was around. And that's when I felt like, like the world was just watching me and Rudy. Like at one point, and there was an actor who got it too. Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks got the same day as the game got shut down.
Yeah, so it was like I feel like it was like us three, like, and the world was just like looking at us, like, and I didn't tell anybody I was home. Like I just was quiet about it. But everybody, when I tell you, everybody was calling me, and I'm just like, I don't know. Like I don't feel anything. I'm waiting.
Shutting down a casino because you
the encore in Boston. That's when it just opened.
That is that will never happen again for anything.
It's just weird because the NBA was going to shut down at some point.
Right.
It just happened to be that night, and it happened to be because Rudy tested positive because he wasn't feeling well. Rudy probably wasn't the first NBA player that had it.
No.
You weren't the second.
No.
Like,
but we just had no idea.
We had no idea.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Were you in Connecticut up until the bubble, or did you go anywhere else?
Yeah. Believe it or not, Connecticut, that whole process of working out for the bubble in my mom's basement using 5 to 10 pound weights was the reason why I found a place in Connecticut to build. Because I was like, we're on Zoom calls and I'm watching Mike Conley. He's in his freaking gym with his weight room. And, you know, I'm over here like, yeah, you know, I'm on the pavement, you know, doing burpees and shit, like getting ready for the season. But that was the reason why I was like, all right, I kind of need my own place, like to kind of call home and, you know, have something in case something ever happens again.
It definitely worked though, because you were ready.
It did. I was. That was probably the best basketball played, in my opinion. Like, because that's all guys could think about. Like, that's all you were doing. You were same place, no travel. Every day you locked in, and some guys felt like it was annoying. I just thought it was a big ass elite camp. Like whoever has 100, 200 of the best players in the world at camp, like with each other.
Yeah, Jamal Murray was on Taylor Rook's show the other day, and he said it was the basketball at its highest level. And I think some of that, I think the biggest part of that was actually the no travel.
People don't understand that.
I think that was the, like, we still played every other day. We still were practicing. And, you know, we with the Pelicans, like, we practiced. Like, we were running up and down. And I was still having wine after games, mm-hmm. you know, just to decompress and go to sleep. But I had never felt, as an NBA player in competition, man, that fresh night to night. I think that was the biggest part. Distractions are one. I also think there's an element of the guys that gave a fuck and actually didn't mind being there played really well.
Yeah.
And there was rightfully so, there were some guys there that didn't want to be there.
Right.
And if you were on the wrong matchup of that,
you were part of it.
Like, you were going to have problems.
100%. 100%. And it's like for me, I live by myself. And that was 3 years, like, still live by myself. But even 3 years ago, like, I'm 2 years removed out of college. So I'm used to being in a dorm. I'm used to going to play a game. But the travel piece, like, and you're in Florida. So, like, it's good on your bones, good on your body. So, like, you, every night you go play, and you play some games at 4 o'clock. And then the next night, you play every day, but you're 4 o'clock and then an 8 o'clock. So now you get fucking 48 hours of maybe 52 hours of rest, and then you play another playoff game. Like, that was huge. That goes a long way. And like you said, you know, I think UD said it the other day. He was like, he tried to set a tone by not talking to people in the bubble. And you could see the difference of guys who really wanted to be there and who didn't.
Did you have a favorite of those Jamal matchups in terms of? Because it felt like you went off every single night.
It's crazy. Like, we talk about this all the time, him and I. Like, we had been going at it since college. Like, just the world finally watched. Like, I wouldn't say we had 50 balls, but, like, we went at it every game since college. UK, Louisville, Then we played in the same division, Denver, Utah, but now people were watching. And at that point, you know, it just literally became to a point where it was like, you score, I score. Like, we're going to a point. But my favorite one was the game where I think it was going game three. We obviously won game three. We both had 50, I think, you know, but that one for me, I was probably as a gamer, I came in like, all right, like, we need game three. We can't let this go back to game four. We can't let this go 2-2. Like, we need game four. And then everyone else on my staff at the time in Utah, they love game seven. Like, that was probably the first time in my NBA career where I said, all right, I'm not going to score tonight. Jamal's not scoring. And, you know, we guarded each other the whole game. And that was our worst shooting percentage out of all the games as a group. Like, we literally just picked each other up full court. And if we did score, the other one scored, just back and forth, like nonstop. And that one for me, that series was just wild.
I've been on the wrong side of a 3-1 series lead. We, you know, 2015 to Houston. How would you sort of describe in the moment what you're feeling as it goes from 3-1 to 3-2 to 3-3, and then you've got a game seven where anything can happen?
That was my first and only game seven. I didn't feel it, like the pressure. Maybe in part because we didn't go to Denver for game six. And then you feel like, oh shit, like we might, like this might be it. Or like you play in Utah. The crowd aspect, I think, was huge as well. I tell people that all the time, like, you know, you get the ball in the fourth quarter, like, with a minute and 50, the whole arena is standing up and they all rise at once when you bring the ball. Like, you know that, you know what I'm talking about. You ring up the foot and everybody just starts standing up. Like, there's a certain element. You wouldn't know if it was like the fourth or the first in the bubble. You know what I mean? So I didn't feel it from a pressure standpoint. I just really was like, man, we need this one. Every night was like, we need this one. But game seven in the game, when you miss three or four in a row, it doesn't feel like the end of the world, but it feels different. And that was my first one. So I get it now. And we had came back from being down like 15, tied the game. I had a good third quarter to kind of bring us back after having foul trouble early. And it was just like, you know, it's all about who you have around you. We had guys that, man, we just tried to fight away first to persevere, but it's tough, man. Like, when you get backs against the wall like that shit hurt. Like, that was one of the toughest losses, because you immediately go back to, if I didn't take forever, and the 8-second call, game one, we were up 20, game five, game six, anything can happen, and then game seven, anything can happen. So it's just like, you immediately go back to the what I should have, could have did, and that's a terrible feeling as an athlete to go right immediately after that, like, I could have, I should have, especially an 8-second call. Like, for me, that's where I put the blame on. I put the blame on myself, and everybody tells me not to. I put the blame on myself for... Because it was one of those where the clock starts, but you hit out of bounds, so you only have 6 seconds to bring the ball up. So I'm just walking it up gingerly, and that's a pivotal game. They come down, score. Yeah, we score, but then they hit another shot. So now it's a tie game. Like, that changes the entire complexion of the series. And that one was what hurt for me.
I was trying to think of a way to describe the feeling. Because you're still confident, but I think by the time you get to game seven, it's sort of like if there was a glass of wine sitting right here, like a nice bottle of red, you know, nice glass of red burgundy, and you tapped it over, and like, I'm watching it fall, and yeah. I'm like, oh shit, like, I don't think I'm gonna be able to catch this. This burgundy's gone, you know? Exactly. It's like, that's sort of what the feeling is like. It's like, oh, that's inevitable.
Right.
And it's funny you bring up not really thinking about game seven, because when I think about that series against Houston, I think about the fact that for games one and two, CP was hurt with a hamstring injury. So we lose, you know, we lose game two. Then we go up 3-1. We win two at home. Thinking about really how nonchalant we were about game five, because we know we're coming back to LA game six. And then I think about that fourth quarter where, you know, at some point in the third, we're up 19. And then Josh Smith and Jason Terry and Corey Brewer all go nuts in the fourth quarter with James Harden on the bench. I think about all those what ifs. Yeah. I don't ever think about game seven.
Never. Because it's like, why are we there?
Yeah.
Why are we there? Like, we didn't do what was necessary. Like, the one outside of the 8-second violation, the one that gets me is a 20-point lead in game five.
Yep.
Like, we put them away. And you could feel that they were ready to fold. They were, like, and I say, like, they were right here. and they started the second half out, maybe hit their first two shots, whatever it was. And then it's like, oh, they sit up a little bit, like, okay. And then we don't execute as well. We commit a stupid turnover. Like now, then we're thinking like, all right, we'll get it back. We'll get it back. And then next thing you know, now we have to go to a game six. Like why are we even at that point? And that's the one thing that really hurts us because we just, like you said, not nonchalant, you know, because there's other games that can be played. We have other chances to win until you get to game seven. Then it's like, well, you put yourself in this position.
When you're talking to the guys here, is it a thing? I mean, obviously it's like Kevin is here. There's a couple other guys here that have been through this, but for the most part, it's a young team that has not. Is this one of those things that like they just have to be in it to get it? Like, is there anything you could even say? Or is like until you're in this experience, you don't
talk about the game seven experience,
well,
or just the playoffs?
Just the playoff experience of going to a game six, going to a game seven.
You have to experience it, but you, I think for me, I'm very thankful for the vets I had my rookie year. You know, whether it was, I mean, Ricky hadn't made it to a playoff, but he was still a vet. Ricky, Epe Udo, who else? Derek Favors, Rudy, Joe Ingles, like guys who have been there, and you prepare for it now or when camp starts. So like there's certain times in practice where guys will be like, that's a foul. Well, I'm like, we're not getting that in game three in Milwaukee. So get over it. Like stop complaining to it. Like the little things you can start to put into situations. Like even when you're playing throughout the regular season, like, you know, certain turnovers, like, yeah, we're up 20 against the bottom team in the league and we're probably going to win this game in the fourth. But I've been up 20 in the third quarter and we've lost 12 times last year in Utah. So like kind of going at it from that standpoint is the best way, I think, to prepare for it because until you're there, you're there. But how do you prepare before that happens? And a lot of it for me is turnovers and foul calls, like in the defensive mishaps. Like, oh, like, no, there's none of that. Hold yourself to the highest level. And you're not going to be perfect. You're going to fuck up. Like, you're not going to be perfect. But if you can hold yourself to that every day and exaggerate it, like, get overboard with it. So then when it becomes routine, we're in March, April, May, June, and it's like, oh, this is what it is. Even the moment at its highest, you're still falling back to those habits because you're used to playing through whatever it may be.
I think early in my first take tenure, this is when you guys were playing fairly well to start the season. I think you had the number one net rating in the league for the first 6 weeks or so. And I made a comment about your group potentially being like Milwaukee, where there's a series of playoff failures that, you know, Giannis and Milwaukee had, whether that was conference semifinals or, you know, losing to Boston without Kyrie in 18 and losing to Toronto. And then there's a breakthrough. And I said, you know, this Utah Jazz could be this year's Milwaukee Bucks team. And by like midseason, I'm like, I think the Utah Jazz are stale. And whether that's fair or not, I don't know. But I think about my Clippers team a lot. And I think about the life cycle of teams.
I do too.
Yeah. I think about the life cycle of teams where there's like promise. And sometimes there's failures that are so devastating, whether that was, you know, Houston in 2015 or the year before losing to Oklahoma City. And you can't recover from them. I don't know why. And because of those failures, they're like abnormal failures, right? And I don't know if it's resentment that builds within the team or whatever it may be. It's like they weigh more heavily on the group than others would.
Yeah.
Do you think that's sort of accurate?
Yeah, I think there was the Clippers series. Denver made us stronger. Denver was like, okay.
Right, because you guys came back and you were number one
seed. Like, yeah. Denver made us stronger. We had Boyan, who we didn't have in the bubble. But the Clippers, it was like, oh, like, because we felt like this was, even though I was hurt and Mike had his hamstring thing, we were like, okay, we get Mike back. You know, we beat the Clippers. We can beat Phoenix. We believe in that confident, or at least give ourselves the best opportunity to beat Phoenix, and then possibly go from there. And I feel like that was the problem. Like that was a problem. So I take that for myself as well. I put a lot of pressure on myself in that way. But like, I'm thinking like, okay, all we need is one in LA and we might, you know, get there. But I think LA, the way we lost game six, that was difficult to recover from because now for the first time in my career, we were a talking topic of the offseason. Like for the first time in our group, we were like, you're in LA, you're talked about I mean, even though it's like it's not the Lakers, you're still talked about. Like for us, that was the first year where we were the talking topic of stuff. And now those conversations are louder. The losses are louder. The wins aren't as loud because we're expected to win, and every mistake is louder. Now it's not even just TV. It's
then you guys start blowing leads last exactly. year, and that
now
gets
you
louder,
blow leads. Yeah. Now that gets louder. Do we have enough? Is Donovan, you know, good enough to do this? Is Rudy good enough? Is Mike? Is this team? Is this the same team every year? And you can say what you want, but at the end of the day, like we are all people. Like we hear that. Like you know what I mean? You could say like, oh yeah, I don't have Twitter. Like you hear it at some point, whether it's the reporters asking you the questions post game. Like at some point, you're going to hear it. And I think that after the Clippers won, it was just one of those things it just hit us, and it was just one of those things we just couldn't recover from that. Because we continuously lost the same way, and that's how we ended up losing to Dallas. But you know, I like I said, man, we had a talented group, and you know, it sucks. Like it killed me that we didn't get as far as we could have. But it's a learning lesson, I think, that I'll be able to take for my career and continuously put in to Cleveland where I'm at now, and be like, hey, like doesn't matter, you know, what on paper we are, doesn't matter what we should be. Because I just love the situation where we could have been, you know, something really special. And we weren't. We didn't get the job done. So I think for me, I'm appreciative of it. It hurts, but I'm appreciative of it because now I find a way to continuously try and grow.
I was going to say, we always talk about that with your Philly teams. I mean, they're very different situations, but all the little things that can go wrong, and there's so many ways you can look back and say, wish I did this, wish I did that. And it's just why it's hard to win.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really
exactly.
hard. There's one team that wins.
Exactly.
The one other thing I wanted to bring up that we talked about a little bit was just the Thunder series, a rookie year. Not that that's, you know, translative to the guys in this team in terms of the young guys and like that, but like at that point, was it almost like you were too young to know what you were doing? Because what you did is crazy in retrospect. We were talking about it earlier when we were watching the highlights and everything, but you know, 28 a game, 36 in the closeout and everything like that is not a normal thing for a rookie guard to come in, especially to a team like that, you know, that had been there before and everything.
Yeah. At that time, I had no idea. I think for me, I really fell heavily into Quinn, my vets, and then I give a lot of credit to Johnny Bryant, who's the assistant coach on the Knicks, which is a lot of reasons why people thought I was going to New York. But like, man, like when I tell you I had a notepad, he's going to be mad I shared this, but I have a notepad after every game and I would write down my pros, like my positives and my failures. And I would go, we had played OKC four times in the regular season. And we had lost, I think got swept, you know? So it was like, all right, what can they do? And a lot of what they did was just be physical. And when you play a team like us, like, the way to kind of get us up is be physical. Take us out of our execution because everything is so precision. Everything's precision, on time, on target, whatever.
The flow.
Exactly, the flow. Flow, nonstop flow. So they had done that to us a bunch. And, you know, at that moment, like I'm playing against a guy in Russell Westbrook who I would literally sit there in college. I'm a 2-foot jumper and he used to dunk up everybody on 2 feet. So I'm like, I'm watching the dunk on the laptop and then going and trying it. Like, this is a year ago. And now I got a chance to play against him, guard him, and beat him. And then Carmelo Anthony, who I'm obviously from New York, and he's Nick great. Like, he's great in general, but I think in New York, everybody loves Melo. Like, he's, you know, God, which is well-deserved. And, you know, to be able to be that and watch. And Paul George is one of the reasons why I'm in the NBA. I decided to stay in the draft because he told me, like, bro, they don't go back to school. So I have all three of them on in front of me. And it's like, you know, you have this challenge, this task. And you know, I went back to those notes, like after every game, like you write, and this is a notepad. And, that's honestly what my preparation. And then obviously the game itself, the game is the game, you know, but as my preparation for that was, you know, looking back at it, like, man, like the little things. But as a rookie to do that, it was wild. and in a way it was wild.
As a competitor, you know, I would ask Joe or I'd ask Quinn. I know Johnny a little bit and had some wine with him in New York when he got the Knicks job, but yeah, I'd ask them about you and all the things you're saying, like they co-signed, you know. And I don't know if you knew this or not, but there were some teams when you were coming out of the draft that said you were too polished, too nice, too polite, too well-rounded. You must be full of shit.
I'd heard that.
You heard that?
I'd heard that. Now, yeah. I didn't hear it at the time.
You didn't hear it at the time.
I had heard it after.
But afterwards.
Yeah.
You heard that.
And I don't think I've ever heard that before. Like, yeah. You know, I must be full of shit.
Too well-rounded is
too well-rounded.
They're always looking for reasons to hate on a guy.
There's always something, man. And if I could leave the people who are my age and younger watching this, man, like, they'll just be you. Like, there's always going to try and find something, man. They're always going to try and find something to hate on. You can be great. Like, LeBron James is one of the greatest players to ever play this game, and I've never seen somebody attacked for every little thing, you know, like, so much. They're just going to, that's goes to the culture, like you said. Like, they're going to try and find something, but just be you. And I'm thankful for my parents for raising me this way, and I'm never going to stop being myself. But, you know, like everybody says,
we got a 6-year track record now.
6 year, like,
yeah, you know, of you not being full of shit. Yeah, so yeah, I think you're in the clear.
Exactly.
All right, man. We appreciate the time.
I appreciate this. Awesome. You guys.
Thank you, bro.
Thank you, guys.
If you like The Old Man of the Three, you can listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Yo, Trey.
Kevin, what's up, man?
You know, I've been thinking, what would have happened if the NBA never vetoes the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers and we get CP3 in the same backcourt as Kobe in LA?
Well, you get a very happy Jack Nicholson, for sure.
And the Lakers probably win a bunch more championships. CP3 finally gets a ring or two or three, and the Kardashian empire is forever altered.
What did you just say? Hey, everybody, I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier, and we're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass
or play call. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that saved Abercrombie? Or which real tech acquisition is like Game of Thrones? Or the one financial equation that can finally solve climate change? Then check out the daily news podcast, The Best One Yet. Every morning on The Best One Yet, hosts Nick and Jack serve up three of the most interesting business news stories and why you need to know them in just 20 minutes. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies, you're going for that promotion at work, or you just want to know the trends before your friends, be in the know this year by starting your morning with The Best One Yet every weekday. Follow The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.